Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, it's Maria Hernandez.
Good morning, Maria. How are you? I'm Stuart. I'm Adrian's producer. She'll be with you in 1 second. Hang on.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Hello.
Good morning.
Hello. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm terrific. Hi.
Good, good. I think Blog Talk still be going on, or is that done?
No, it's done.
Okay, good. So thank you so much for being on the show. We're not on yet. Let me just tell you how it works, okay?
Sure.
We will start with a little music, and then I'm going to introduce the show and you. I have plenty of questions. I'm very excited about what you do, and we'll talk a little bit, of course, about impact for health. And then I want to do a little bit of a deeper dive. I'd like to talk about pay for success and how that works and value-based payments and, of course, our whole issue that we've got about how healthcare is paid for. Those are just some of the things. And we'll talk about the inclusion scorecard. I'll introduce myself a little bit in a minute, but before I do, I always ask all of our guests, if there's one thing they would like to bring out and they don't want to miss it, what would it be so that I can ask the question directed to that?
Yeah, and I really prepared around the issue of health equity and what it means and sort of really, you know, followed your question. So I'm prepared to talk about all of the other items, but given what is currently in the news today, that's probably the thing that people need to understand. And the other is that health equity is important for all of us. It's not just about one racial group. It's certainly going to impact anyone who's experiencing some of the challenges of aging. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's what I wanted to, how I want to introduce myself. That's perfect.
Sure.
So I'm actually just got off a meeting with the UN. There's a couple of things that I do that have to do with this.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'd like to do is make sure that after we're done today, we can have a meeting and talk about it. I'm on the communications committee of the NGO on Aging for the UN. And one of the things we're doing is a newsletter. And in that newsletter, my job has to do with terms that are trending. So I want to make a distinction with you between equality and equity. And our government, the administration, is making that distinction, and I get it.
Yeah.
So I think we want to do that, to explain that. And in terms of some of the things you do, I would like to talk to you further about it for our committee.
Of course.
The second hat that I wear is the executive director of the Catalyst Institute. And that is a nonprofit for increased health span. But what we're really getting at is to have a national policy in the United States, like they have in the UK. So we have conferences and conventions and all this, but we're going to Washington eventually. And we started. So I really do want to talk to you about that. And I think that although our lane is very much scientific, and it's all about making geroprotection part of our health policy and prevention as opposed to cure only. Although that's true, what we see is that if we're successful, we can have a problem because the social determinants of aging and longevity, which I want to talk about also, keep some people back. And even if we get what we want, it's not going to be for everybody unless we're careful. And that's where the equity issue comes. With us, because if a metformin or other devices or anything like that, which are geroprotective, are available for pay, we got a problem because there are a lot of people who are going to be left out.
Sure,
and
of course.
And so there's a. So I think there are things we can even help you with, because we have just so mm-hmm. much deep information on health and social determinants. But I'd like to talk about that later on.
Terrific. It would be my pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. So this is great. So then what happens is we have four segments. They're about 9 to 11 minutes. And at the end of each one, I know when they're over and you don't. So if you hear me talking a little longer, it's because I don't want you to get cut off. Okay? And the second thing is we have a chance in between to just regroup and say, all right, this is what we're going to talk about next and next and next. All right?
Okay.
So and that's it. When we're done, it goes on to all of the disseminators. It goes on to the podcast disseminators, our website, YouTube. We send it to you. You could use it any way you want. It belongs to you. And we really want you to just promote your own show as much as possible because that promotes us.
Lovely.
So that's what that's all about.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Okay. So, Stuart, we are ready. Okay. Stuart is trying to get his own phone to stop ringing. So that it doesn't ring in the middle of everything because it's on mute and it rang.
That's bothering
him.
So
give him a minute. The other thing is it's a pretty lively show. We're peppy, and we have a lot of fun.
I heard a few, I'm really looking forward to it.
Oh, you did? Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
I went through your, by the way, while he's fiddling with his phone there, I went through your whole website. And I was really impressed because there's a woman named Monica Sternin at Tufts, mm-hmm. and she and her husband, he passed away, wrote Positive Deviance, which is a way of making social change by looking at what's working instead of what's not working. And what you're doing has got Positive Deviance written all over it. I
have thought of myself as a deviant for a very long time. No question.
But if you look at it, it's great. They're the people who went to Vietnam with no money, and the kids were starving, and they looked at who wasn't starving instead of who was, and they implemented that. Interesting stuff.
Yeah.
All right, Stuart's phone is now dead, I hope. We're ready to rock and roll. Okay, very good. We have to be quiet now. For about a half a minute or so, and you'll hear music, and then you'll hear me introduce you.
I look in the mirror, I don't see wrinkles. When I look in the mirror, I see hair on my head, not my shoulder.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the fountain of truth, the fountain of truth about aging. And I'm just so excited today because I'm always bragging. You know that. I'm always bragging. This is information you couldn't get anywhere else. That's what I tell everybody. But the fact is today, this is information you can't get anywhere else because we have with us Dr. Maria Hernandez. She's president and COO of Impact for Health. And that is impact and then the number four, health. Now, she's a thought leader in health equity. What does that mean? It sounds good, doesn't it, health equity? But it happens to be one of the most important movements, not only in the United States, but in the world. And what I would like to do is what a friend of mine calls a benign arms race, to be the first in health equity in the world. But before we could do that, we have to understand what it means, unpack the concept, and see why it's so important to every one of us. So thank you, Dr. Hernandez, for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Adrienne. It's such a pleasure to be with you.
So this is going to be fun because we're going to introduce new words. So you are somebody who is championing, perhaps, let's say, devoting a lot of your life to the issue of health equity. Mm-hmm. It's rearing itself as a trendy word right now. But what does it mean? Explain it to us if we're hearing it and understanding it for the first time.
Sure. So health equity has been defined in a lot of different ways, but the basic principle is this. It means that everyone has a fair and just opportunity to be as healthy as possible. And what we see today is that that's not the case. All of the data that especially is coming from the impact of the pandemic is showing just how difficult it is for certain communities to actually achieve health, and of course, right now, how to respond to the pandemic. So when we say fair and just opportunity, it's really looking at access to care and the conditions in which people live, the conditions in which they work. And you can well imagine that we're uncovering that some individuals in our society do not have that opportunity.
And that goes across the board of the lifespan. What I want to bring out here, we're going to talk about another word, which is social determinants. What I want to bring out here is that healthy aging doesn't start when you're 65 and you get your Social Security. It starts almost in the womb, actually, and throughout life. And, Doctor, we've had a conference where we've had Dr. Daniel Belsky on, who actually studies for the NIA, National Institute on Health, the social determinants of aging. And what did he come up with? Child abuse, hunger in early age, inability to go to school, as all social determinants of aging. And what I want to bring out to everybody, and I'll get it off my soapbox in a minute, is that at 73-year-old, which I am, I have less of a chance of dying of COVID than many other people. Same age. It's not about age. It's about how much they had access to nutrition, health care, exercise, education, and then good health care around them. It's a big issue. So let's go back to social determinants. That sounds like a fancy word, you know, from the world of social science. But explain that, because we're looking at health in a very different way because of COVID.
Absolutely. And you bring up an excellent point in why we need to talk about those conditions that you just revealed, Adrian. One of the things I want to add to that, there has been some additional work actually in the UK on what are some of the most accurate predictors of a person's overall health. And the social determinants are indeed one a set of those. But here's one more that's really surprising. It's the degree to which you have control over your daily routine. So imagine the contrast that I'm going to give you where this study here in the United States sort of focused on is bus drivers. If you've ever seen what a bus driver has to do, they scurry around trying to make it to their stop at the right time, and they have no control over traffic or the traffic lights or the, you know, folks that get on the bus that are slow or people who are disruptive. They have some of the highest rates of heart disease and diabetes. On the other hand, executives who can manage their day and control their day, actually, even with all the stress that they have better health outcomes. So we know what you eat, the air you breathe, the housing that you're in, the kind of stresses that you face are absolutely those social determinants of health, and we need to know about those in order to provide the best quality of care. But another is just the way in which we take charge of our lives or have control over them. And I wonder if you find that interesting.
I find it actually fascinating. And one of the things that I like to do is make things very accessible to listeners. You know, I have lack of control in one respect, and that is I sit down all day long. I'm watching Zoom meetings minute to minute. So I bought a desk that raises up, you know, one of those raise-up desks. It cost me $195. And I said to myself, this is really cheap. But you know what? There are some people who make $195 for a whole week. How are they going to get a raise-up desk or whatever they need? So all of these things become part of personal health. Now, in the few minutes we have left, I want to throw something to you, though. We have populations who don't have the control that they should have. How do we get to them, though, for their own behavioral health? Because the truth is, you can stand up at a desk. You can, even if you don't have any money to go to a gym, get soup cans like the King of Sweden did once to show his population they should be lifting weights. He took soup cans, and he lifted them. Or take a walk. That's this behavioral health part with underserved populations or people that don't have the equality. That's a big mystery to me. How do you approach it at Impact for Health?
So that has to do with the type of education and access to the right kind of care that we promote for diverse communities that don't have access to some of the things that we've just talked about. So it's very difficult to do, indeed, to motivate individuals to look at that when they can't take care of basic needs. So I think one of the factors that we try to promote is making sure there's culturally competent care. So, for example, if you're trying to encourage people to eat the right foods to avoid diabetes, let's talk about that in ways that are accessible to them. So I always give this example, you know, Latinos have high rates of diabetes. And if you start to talk about food and never mention, you know, you can make tacos and burritos with really healthy ingredients. You can change a few things in the way you make those in order to reduce the fat calories. But that is culturally competent care, that we're talking about these issues in ways that are meaningful to the individuals. Your example about exercise, not everybody can afford a gym membership, but can we lift water bottles? Can we go for a walk outside? Depending on where we live, sometimes even that is a challenge. So it's marching in place, right? There's a lot of different substitutes. But I think, Adrienne, the fundamental factor here is the education about healthy behaviors and what those can do for you, and making sure people have access to some of those resources. That's where this really is a conundrum, because some of those basics are very difficult to find in, you know, communities where there's high concentrations of poverty, or, you know, where the community is located is very, you know, much around polluted air, or there's no way you can exercise because it's just not safe to. It is a huge agenda, I think, for the United States to start to look at what we're doing to make communities livable for all.
So what we're going to do when we come back, we're going to ask yet another tough question, and that's, who's really responsible for this? Is it local government communities? Is it the national? We believe, of course, and I'll explain this a little bit later when we come back, we believe it should be a national policy for health span. I'll tell you why. But it's not so easy. And you have, Dr. Hernandez, been very successful in what you've been doing. So when we come back, we're going to see how you have made some change, and then go further to say, how should we be making change? Don't you guys go anywhere.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da-da-da-da.
Okay, so now you see how it goes. Pretty easy, right?
Yes, of course. How did I do?
Okay. Perfect, wonderful. So when we come back, I do want to talk about the inclusion scorecard. That's what I was kind of getting at with that.
Yep.
And then I really, you know, I just moved to, very fast, I just moved to California. I'm from New York, New Jersey. California is doing certain things. That is not happening in, let's say, New York, New Jersey. So I wouldn't mind if after that we talked about the Alameda County Pay for Success, the asthma initiative. Now, that may not be on your list. Is that okay, though?
It's okay. That project has ended, and we sort of had to let it sit where it is. But I can tell you about it and why that's such an important example.
Well, if not, that's all right. What I'm trying to get at is, how much is the responsibility at what level of government? Really, who should be doing it and why? Because I want my audience to tell the right people to go do this.
Right.
We have proactive people listening.
That.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, Stu, we are ready.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. A little bit of housekeeping. We are doing a seminar. You know, it's kind of interesting. Everything is related. February 26th, and that's going to be, of course, online webinar. And it's on exercise. And our panelists include Dr. Tom Rando, one of the great geroscientists in the field of exercise and mitochondria and how you strengthen your cells, but also, very interesting, author Dr. Daniel Lieberman. He just came out with a book, and he may be winning the Pulitzer. He's an anthropologist who actually has many, many successful books out, but his latest book is called Exercised, Why It Is So Hard Anthropologically, Evolutionary, to Exercise and Get Out There, and what you could do about it. And we also have a little bit of a contest. Everybody will get a chance to win one of his books free. He's giving us several of them out to our audience. So if you do want to be part of this free webinar and you want to attend, you just have to go to my website, Adrienne Berg, ADRIANEBERG.com, and you'll see contact me and say, please send me a free ticket. So that's going to be February 26th, I think at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. And then you'll get the recording, too, if you can't make it. So that's all about exercise, as we've talked about. Now, let's go back now. We are speaking now with Dr. Maria Hernandez. She's president and COO of Impact for Health. And you can take a look at that. We're going to give you the website in a minute. I can tell you that any nonprofit is swimming uphill. Do you swim uphill? I guess you swim upstream. So, yeah, I've been watching too many commercials. There's one with a great song that says, the birds are swimming in the air. So I think I conflated that. But here we go. You know, you and I probably, Maria, we're swimming uphill when we try to get things done. But you're getting things done. And you've got something called Inclusion Scorecard, which is making a hit in order for you to get people in the healthcare world more aware of this issue of health equality and equitable health. So tell us a little bit about the Inclusion Scorecard.
Yes, absolutely. So what we did over the course of a few years is we looked at what are some of those best practices that hospitals are implementing to address these vulnerable populations. And that can mean a lot of things in different communities. It can be, you know, Black and brown communities. It can be elders. It can be veterans. It can be a number of populations that are more vulnerable in their ability to access care. And we did the best that we could to organize 70 to 80 different best practices that we found both at hospitals and in the literature. And let me just tell you how it's organized. Some of these best practices are just about tracking the right metrics, the right information to really understand whether or not there are indeed inequities in the patients that a hospital is serving. Another body of best practices is focused on what you do inside the hospital to create this culture of inclusion where people really feel engaged and that they belong and it's friendly and it's very respectful of those different populations that they serve. The third is about making that important link between the quality of care and health equity. Someone has to be accountable for measuring where we are and moving the needle forward. And the last area is about how engaged that hospital is with the community it serves. So what we do with different systems in the nation right now is we introduce them to this scorecard. We actually give it away for free. We can come in and help them implement the assessment process. But what we've found is that no hospital can address health equity by itself. When you think about who's responsible for health equity, it's really a combination of forces. It's the hospital, it's the community agencies that are working with those patient populations that they are working with as well. Because a lot of people go back and forth, right? It's not just what's happening in their four walls. It's what's happening in the community. And it's business leaders that also have a large employee base. They need to keep their employees healthy, and they too need to be at the table. So we, in essence, come in, support a hospital's adoption of this scorecard to measure where are they today, and of course, find out where the gaps are in what they want to be doing and where they need to be, right, where they are today. So I have to say I'm really proud that it creates a lot of conversations that are absolutely essential and really align with what your focus is. And that is, how do we make sure everyone has access to health? How do we make sure everyone is treated right when they go into a hospital and that they have the best possible experience when they're there?
And what I want to also point out is that this trickles up and trickles down to everybody. When you have this real desire to know who your patient is and what will resonate with them and how to treat them, it becomes a part of the entire culture of any healthcare facility. So let me tell you what you can do about this. I'm going to make an analogy here. Dr. Hernandez mentioned the UK. If you're my listeners, you know that I'm very jealous because the UK has what they call the national policy on health span, and it's called Health of a Nation. And they have a goal, and that goal is for everybody to have five more years of not just longevity, but healthy longevity, which is what health span is. And one of the things they're doing is very parallel to what you're hearing here. They're creating an index for corporations. Corporations will be vetted for whether or not they create a healthy environment and a culturally competent environment. We'll talk about that in a minute, for their employees. And in a way, it's going to shame them because it's a government thing, so they're going to publish it. They're going to say whose index is good and who isn't, and who's participating and who isn't participating. And believe me, there's going to be pressure. They'll participate. Well, now, what can you do? You can, when you have your medical home or choose a new hospital, which I just had to do because I moved, Dr. Hernandez, across country, you can ask them, are you participating in the inclusion scorecard? They'll say, what are you talking about? And then you can tell them. You can bring them over to the website that shows them what they can do. These are small things that every listener here could do that would change the world. So if people did want to know more about it, where would they go to educate themselves about the inclusion scorecard, Impact for Health, and everything that you're doing?
Yeah, thank you so much, Adrian, for bringing that up. And what an incredibly great idea that the UK is promoting about measuring the health of a corporation so that employees stay healthy. It's terrific. You can visit our website on the World Wide Web at impactforhealth.com, and that is the number 4, so impactforhealth.com. And we've got a couple of links there that tell you more about the scorecard. And if you fill out the information card, we certainly can follow up and set that up for you if you actually are part of a hospital environment. And even if you're not, we're happy to share with you more about this so that when you go to visit your physician, you can talk about how important health equity is. And something that we haven't talked about yet, Adrian, is how important it is for all of us to know there is such a thing as culturally competent care, and what gets in the way of it is that unconscious bias that we all have.
Well, we have a problem here, and that problem is we may be going in a full circle. I'll tell you a story. We had a guest, and he is a Scotsman, and he is the head of a nursing home in the Midwest that was one of the very few, maybe the only, that had no COVID cases at all. It wasn't just that there were no COVID deaths, it was that there were no COVID cases. And this particular nursing home and assisted living was started in the early 1900s, late 1800s, to specifically help the population in the area. And they knew exactly what the culture of Scotsmen were. Well, as years went by, this became the wrong thing to do. It wasn't diverse enough. And so, of course, they held fast, and they continued, and they knew how to message everything to their people. They knew what their people responded to and all this. They were culturally competent. But there was a time, Dr. Hernandez, when that was old hat. You didn't do that. That was discriminatory even. Now we're accepting that people are different. And they need different messages, and they need different kind of help. Now, do you get pushback on that when you try to explain cultural competency? This is no. There's a prejudice behind that. We shouldn't say that. And I don't know the answer. I'm really asking you if that is a hard message to deliver.
It is. One of the things that I think we tend to struggle with in our country is we believe in equity, which is treat everybody the same.
The
right?
same.
Well, that
right.
yeah, that only works if everybody starts out with the same background, the same foundation of life, right? And we know that that's not the case, right?
It
I grew up as the daughter of immigrants. My parents didn't have a formal education. They were very wise. And I can tell you that my journey through college and grad school was very different than some of my colleagues. I know that this early beginning shapes your life in many ways. And so if we think that everyone can be treated the same, it just, you know, is going to be discriminatory to some.
In and of itself. And when we come back, we're going to be talking to you guys, you listeners, about what you think you would like in terms of your healthcare delivery and understanding of who you are. Don't you go anywhere.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me not even a bit, because I am happy and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da-da-da-da.
This is terrific, and I there's one thing that I really don't know the answer to, and maybe it's not much of a question. You use a lot the term upstream social determinants. I don't know if I know what that means. Is that something that might be useful for people to understand?
It's actually just what you described, that in essence, when you look at a person's, conditions in terms of their housing, their environment, you're looking upstream. You're looking outside of what immediately is within their control. And so I don't think that you need to distinguish those so much. I think you've covered that in the first part of our conversation. Yeah.
Great. So now I know that what I wanted to discuss with you, because it's more for the audience to understand what they should be telling their doctors. You'll see how I how I put that. But is there anything, again, as I asked at the beginning, is there anything specific that we're missing that you would like to bring out?
Well, actually, I think one thing you may want to ask about is, what do people need to do, given that we know unconscious bias exists, what do they need to do to make sure that they get the right care that they need? And I speak a lot about making sure patients bring an advocate, even if it's on your Zoom meeting with your doctor. Have someone
right.
else there. That's important for you to think about sharing with them, I believe.
Perfect. All right, we're ready to rock and roll.
All right.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit. I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da, 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 da.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. A little bit more housekeeping. You know that you can go to our website, and that is Adrienne Berg, my name, ADRIANEBERG.com. And immediately when you go, if you're going for the first time, you'll be invited to subscribe to our free newsletter. Now, this is a free newsletter. It sells nothing and never does. You get it every Monday. It's repeated on Wednesday by popular request. And every single week, I will tell you hints and tips on successful aging, things that were in my inbox that I couldn't deal with on the air or in my blogs. And, of course, you'll get free tickets to a lot of things, webinars, webcasts, and hopefully one day live events that deal with our own successful aging. And do remember that aging starts when you're born, maybe before. So this isn't about being old. This is about the wonderful aging process over which you do have much more control than you think. And that's my segue, because I'm going to go back now and speak to Dr. Hernandez, who is the COO and President of Impact for Health, the designer of the Inclusion Scorecard, to make sure that health facilities are culturally competent and are treating their patients in a way that really makes a difference in the outcomes of healthcare. But what I want to talk about now, Dr. Hernandez, and we spoke a little bit about it during the break, is what people can do as individuals to make sure that they're treated in a way that makes a difference to their healthcare outcomes. And you have a lot of thoughts on that. You teach that to the public and to groups. So we now go into a hospital. And in my case, for example, everybody's new. I've never been to any of these doctors or even the dentists. What, other than the 2 minutes they have with me, should I make sure they know about me? And I'm also doing Zoom meetings. How do I take care of all that, this new way of delivering what they call now telemedicine?
Yeah, it's a real challenge, Adrian. And first, let's make sure everyone understands that unconscious biases exist about all sorts of things. They're those snap judgments that we make about people. And physicians have unconscious bias. We all do. It's human nature. And so one of the things that is very important now in healthcare is how physicians are being trained to address this. This is one of the things that we do in different health systems. But I also try to work with patient advocacy groups to make sure they understand what they can do. And so the first thing that I recommend, actually, a patient advocate with you. Now, some hospitals are doing this for special needs groups, especially people who might not speak English as a first language, different vulnerable populations. So let's say you're about to see a physician for the first time and you have a lot of things that you want to talk about. I think it's important to have someone with you that's going to watch for your engagement and their engagement with you. And the second thing that I share is that, unfortunately, physicians on average interrupt a patient 18 seconds into the conversation. Mm-hmm. And it's because they're rushed. It's because they've got a lot to do. And if you anticipate that, I always say, start with the biggest issue on your mind first and foremost. I know that sometimes we go to the doctor and we've got, you know, two or three things that we're really concerned about. And I think it's important to make sure you start with the first thing that you're really, really concerned or scared about, and make sure that that's the first topic at hand. And if you're interrupted, gently but firmly, get back on track, right? And sometimes it's about, doc, I'm not quite finished. Let me just finish one more or two or more sentences. I need to share more. I think that we all have been in that situation where there's a lot of, you know, rush to get through the appointment and get something done. So knowing ahead of time that that might happen prepares us for that. And number two, again, having an advocate with us is absolutely key.
And I want to say a word about hubris here. You know, I think I know things. And I wouldn't say that I would take an advocate with me, I'll be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm
mm-hmm.
learning more and more that that would be wrong. Now, in my case, there wouldn't be one available in the same way. But I'm thinking about my own mom, who is a very smart person. But the fact is, around the age of 80, maybe 82, 85, mm-hmm. she really needed to go with an advocate. And she didn't. We didn't know all that much about her health care and her relationship with her doctors. So what I'm saying is, if you are listening and you're an older adult and you're a pretty smart cookie, don't be so proud. Take somebody with you, even just a family member who's willing to go, because they will hear things differently. They will make sure that things are said by you. I know that she personally hid the fact that she had some falls because it seemed weak. She didn't want to be in the vulnerable population. I know that's also true of people whose English is a second language. They're very proud of the fact of their language ability, so they don't take other people with them. You know, don't be so proud. And I have to teach that to myself, so I'm saying this out loud right now for everybody to hear. Now let's go back to the other side of the fence here, Dr. Hernandez. There's a doctor involved. Do they bristle? Do they say, oh, another pain in the neck patient? I mean, what do you see with regard to that?
You know, I'm seeing a lot of reception to this in a very good and positive way, because I think physicians are just as appalled at the unfortunate realities that we're seeing with the pandemic. I think this has changed for many the conversation internally, so that they're more open to exploring the bias that does exist. I know that one of the factors right now is that most hospitals are on overwhelm. There's a lot happening just to respond to the pandemic. And so you are more likely right now to see your physician online in a Zoom meeting or something equivalent. And I think if you say to them, you know, I feel more comfortable having my family member with me, they're more receptive to that, I think, right now than ever before. But the bottom line is, what do you feel you need to be able to navigate the discussions that are being held about your particular health plan, right? Your specific health needs. And we all know the complexity of navigating healthcare in the United States is daunting for everyone. And it's wise to have another person to guide you. So I think it's important not to let your pride get in the way of really quality care, right?
I absolutely agree with that. And let me just add, too, I'll just for the last few seconds, I'll put my lawyer's hat on for a minute. Take seriously that HIPAA form. When you go into a doctor's office, and now they're even having them sign it online, they're going to ask you, who's allowed to know your medical information? And that's one of our laws. We have to, we can disallow information that's private, and we tell the doctors about that. Think about it. Usually we may be putting in our husband, our spouse, we may even say nobody, whatever. But you may need a patient advocate. So understand two things. One, read it. Put in the names of the people, of every single person that you would trust to know about your information. And second of all, if your life changes, go back to the doctor and change your HIPAA form. That HIPAA form becomes old and rusty, and you don't. You move on. So make sure the right person is there, because they will not legally give the information or allow you to speak with or speak to folks on your behalf unless you let them do that. So when we come back, we're going to be talking a lot more now about who's responsible for our health care. Who's responsible for understanding some of the programs that Dr. Hernandez has put together, and what you can do to make sure that those responsible in government know that this is all so important to you. Don't go anywhere.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age.
Okay. I actually, Orphea, have a question for you. I'm very interested in what's going on in California, because I'm in California. And mm-hmm. I see all these little sparks of what's happening. And I also even see it on your website, which I didn't see in all the years that I lived in New York and New Jersey. There's this, that, and the other thing, but it's really direct service programs for old people is really what we're real good at there.
Right, right.
This is different. It seems to be some innovation. So I wanted to, I don't want to skew it. I want to hear what you have to say, but I'm always looking to the federal government, and I'm just wondering if some of these innovations are not really a matter for the states or the local communities. So, and since you swim in those waters, I want to ask you about that. Now,
this is our
last segment, and that means I really need, I'm going to start with asking you to tell people where to find you and your information.
Sure.
But,
okay.
Again, I really don't want you to miss anything that you wanted to say. Is there something that you would like me to bring out?
Well, I wonder if you want to talk a little bit about the innovations for people to age in place.
Okay.
And maybe you have another show for that, because I think for your audience, certainly they need to know that many, many different parties are playing a role in their healthcare system. You know, the United States is not as advanced as the UK. We have a lot of problems with, you know, mixed payers. But I'm thinking of your audience, and just, yes, they need to know how to engage and lobby for the healthcare that they need. The other is how to stay in their home so that they can be comfortable and safe and not have to rely upon, you know, a nursing facility or a place of that nature.
great. We will do both because, in fact, they're pretty related. So, Stu, we are ready to rock and roll.
Okay, listen.
Yeah. Okay.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age.
And hello, 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 this is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the fountain of truth about aging. Go to our website, adrienneberg.com, be part of our newsletter subscribers. This is all a labor of love. You'll never pay a penny for anything that we do. On the contrary, you may get into some really expensive conferences free of charge, get some wonderful books free of charge, and this is all about you taking responsibility about your own successful aging and that of your families. Now, today we have Dr. Maria Hernandez, President and COO of Impact for Health. And before we go any further, Dr. Hernandez, tell us again how we can find you and your work.
Thank you, Adrienne. Yes, please visit our website on the World Wide Web at impactforhealth.com, and that's the number 4, impactforhealth.com.
Now, during the break, I always ask what's important that we may be missing, and what Dr. Hernandez said is a combination. How can we stay home? How can we not be in the nursing homes where we know how vulnerable we can be, although hopefully they'll be cleaning up their act as well, all because of COVID. And my interest, which is that you be very proactive in your own health care. So let's take the first one first. There are new innovations, including something I'm working on called the medical concierge, that does allow you to stay home. And I think that we're relocating more for retirement. But once we do that, we don't really want to relocate into health facilities. We would like to have our health delivery at home. How realistic is that today?
I think that's very realistic. Look at what we're doing right now as a result of the pandemic, how many families are now visiting with their physician online. Now, there's nothing like being in a physician's office where he can see you and take your pulse and read your heartbeat and all of those good things that they need to do. But we're getting more and more sophisticated about that kind of service being brought to your home. So that's absolutely true. The other is just how we prepare our homes themselves for aging in place. And I think that is another body of innovation. So, for example, monitoring, something that is so important when you have a parent that is getting a little bit older, you start to want to know, are they up today? Did they get up and move around? Are they okay? And we've all seen those different devices that people can use to alert, for help and so on. I think we all need to understand ourselves, what our bodies are doing, how we're taking care of ourselves. What are those signs that say, I may be more susceptible to a fall? Do I need to wear a device that will alert my family that something's happened? Those decisions I think we need to take on early in the aging process so that we anticipate what our needs are going to be as best as we can. And every day there's something new. I'm also seeing some new technology to make sure people remember to take medication. And again, alert a loved one if someone has not followed through on that. So many ways to have those kinds of options, Adrienne, I think are absolutely key because mental health is about having good options in your life, right?
Well, that's absolutely true, and now a little bit of a soapbox. For those of you who know, you know I have a blog called Aging for Beginners, and it's published by Bottom Line Personal. I've taken a hiatus from it because of my executive directorship of the Catalyst Institute, but there's plenty, plenty of stuff on it. So go over to Aging for Beginners and take a look at What Should I Call My Robot? Because that is a blog about all the things that help you technically, from technology point of view, age in place. But here's the soapbox, Dr. Hernandez. There are, because I go to every one of these conferences, I have to tell you, and even the Consumer Electronics Show has what they call the Silver Pavilion, which is all of these devices. Two things to say. Number one, they cost money. and they're not covered. Maybe if you are on Medicaid, which is really a poverty program, some of these things are covered. But otherwise, you have to pay out of pocket. And it's costing us millions, maybe trillions, because the number one thing that people go to emergency rooms for is not COVID. It's falls. Mm-hmm. And all of these emergency devices and the environmental monitoring could prevent that, but it's not covered. And it's expensive. And your medication robot, I know several of them, cost money. It's as simple as that. One of them is wonderful. It costs $1,200. So we have a health divide here that is very, very specific and very palpable. The second is, if you bought it, use it. Don't, if you've got an emergency, what they call PERS, personally emergency response device system, like the watch or the pendant, I don't want to see it in the drawer. Wear it and use it. So that's me. It doesn't do, as my mother used to say, she used to buy a lot of vitamins, and she used to say, I've got the healthiest closet in America. Well, take the pill if you're buying it already and you spent the money. All right, so then that takes care of that one. All right, now let's get back. So there's a big payer problem. You know, my whole life now is devoted to prevention instead of cure. It sounds bad. But we won't need the cure if we've got the prevention. And we are in control of that. But a lot of these things cost some money. And who's responsible? Even the cultural competency that you were talking about before, not just things that cost money, but things that cost time. Is it the federal government? You're in the business of making change. Where are you finding the best results in making change?
That's a great question, Adrienne. Boy, we should have a whole nother show on this. But I think the fact is that we have a really perverse system right now. You know, hospitals right now are increasingly taking furloughs for their employees because guess what? They're not making money because many individuals are postponing elective surgery. And so if the hospital is reliant on insurance coverage for those kinds of surgeries, they're really suffering. They're losing millions a day. So that tells you a lot about the perverse nature of how we are funding health in this country. What we need instead is something called a pay for success, right? This is where you find a solution for a particular chronic disease like asthma. And you say, wow, if we figure out what we can do to prevent you from having to go to the emergency department, and it costs like a very small percentage of what it costs to treat you in the emergency room, why wouldn't we pay for that? And that's one of the initiatives that I've been part of with pediatric asthma emergencies here in Alameda County, where I live. What I can say about those programs is that, unfortunately, they're really complex, and we still have a long way to go before it's easy to do a pay-for-success or social impact bond. But I think the future may be such that we begin to look at other ways to fund keeping people healthy. And that has to do with hospitals. It has to do with employers. It has to do with our government, of course. But I want to say, I don't think it's going to happen, Adrienne, if just one system tries to do it. I think it's a really hard, area to address with just, say, you know, Medicare or Medicaid working on it. I think we all have to put our best interests at hand and bring, you know, the community, businesses, and certainly the healthcare system into play.
Well, very well said, and we're at our end of our show, but I want to have an up note here. Everybody knows that I've taken on this directorship of the Catalyst Institute, and it's for increased health span. And we have conferences that deal with payers, who's paying for our health care. And I think that we can be influential. We will be doing a congressional briefing on this, Dr. Hernandez. We do see some, we've already gotten from both sides of the aisle, some interest in looking at these issues in a different way, in a more holistic way. We've been playing what we call whack-a-mole. We look at one disease at a time and try to do something about it and sink trillions into what are really unsuccessful, very long trials, disease by disease. And I think we can look a little bit more holistically, but it takes a lot of effort and it takes stakeholders. And that's why this show talks to the consumer, to the end user, as they say, to us, and translate what's going on in the world of geroscience and healthcare and nonprofits and advocacy to what we can do about it. So please remember, go learn about this, learn about Impact for Health, and ask everybody that is part of your healthcare system, what are they doing about cultural competency? What are they doing to help you stay home so that you don't need a nursing home? And most of all, what are they doing so that you're preventing issues instead of treating and looking for solutions to issues that have already occurred in your own health care? So thank you so much, Dr. Hernandez, and everybody else. You know what I'm going to say? Get out there, kids. It's still COVID, so maybe you have to stay in. But make it happen.
I'm inappropriate.
Okay. Terrific.
Wow. Adrian, you are fabulous. I am so honored that I was a guest on your show, and I hope I can keep in touch with you and stay up to date on everything you're doing. You are absolutely wonderful. Thank you. Thank you for all of what you're doing. I see all these resources on your website. Oh, my gosh. I'm going to send my brother there. I'm the youngest of three, and I have
right.
a brother who was a physician. And we always debate who's the real doctor in the house, but he and I talk a lot about the issues that you present, and I certainly want him to take advantage of listening to your show and getting more information about what you're doing.
Well, in a nutshell, my original background is that I'm a lawyer, and I always say, don't hold that against me. But what happened, it's true, and I've been around a long time. I'm what they call, I used to be an old lady, but now I'm a vulnerable population. So since COVID. So the thing is, I've been working since 1972. And in 1988, we started something called the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys. And there really was no such thing as elder law. And what it really ended up being was studying the national legislation on Medicaid and getting people to be able to apply for Medicaid. That's really what it ended up being. And some of those people were pretty rich, but they did this, that, and the other thing to get Medicaid because it was so expensive. Healthcare was so expensive. And that gave me this background in chronic diseases where people were paying for 20 years because what science was doing was helping you live with Alzheimer's an extra 10 years. And years later, when I finally retired, became a consultant to a lot of financial people and healthcare people, eventually ended up being asked to be the executive director of this institute. And that institute is new. It's a new nonprofit. In fact, we're having fundraising issues. I mean, we're trying to fundraise. But we got very far because we got a big conference going in October during COVID, and we had 1,000 people attend. And we had 80 speakers, top geroscientists.
Wow.
So we started to sort of do what I did with law, which was demystify this whole area of how you age and biological mental aging and geroprotection, all that. And we have Donna Shalala, who did not win as congressman again, but she's working with us. Jamie Raskin, who did win. And believe it or not, Newt Gingrich. Who's got a foundation. He's so fed up giving money to Alzheimer's research that he said maybe we should think about prevention instead of cure. So you'd be surprised what's going on in D.C. And we're trying to educate the staffers now. That's what's going on.
Well, I'm so honored. I'm hosting a meeting for my work here in about a minute, but thank you again so much, and I will reach out to you and follow up and see what you're doing at the Institute. It sounds absolutely fantastic.
It is, and I'll reach out to you because I want to know what's going on in California.
All right, let's do it.
it's very different from what I know. So have a great show yourself,
Thank you.
Take care. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.